Welcome back to another episode of The Art of Healing. I'm your host and therapist friend, Trevor Hansen. At the time of this recording, I, Trevor Hansen, am a master's level student therapist and am not a licensed therapist. I practice therapy under the supervision of fully licensed therapists. This show is not considered therapy, nor is it a substitute for therapy. Today on The Art of Healing, we're talking about healing our relationships through emotions, leveraging the human emotions which we have, which oftentimes we feel like emotions can be our enemies. We often hear things like, oh, you can't trust your emotions, or suppressing your emotions, or running away from the way you feel is going to keep you safe. But really, Michelle Pomeroy, who I interview on the podcast today, she's a licensed marriage and family therapist working out of the EFT clinic in Lehi, Utah. She helps us to explore the conversation of how can we leverage emotions, all emotions, in order to facilitate connection. Because oftentimes we categorize emotions as either good or bad, but really Michelle's conversation helps us to steer our thoughts in a different direction and see emotions as either connecting or disconnecting, and how we can even leverage previously thought of bad emotions or negative emotions as an opportunity to connect with our partner. I'm incredibly excited to have her on the show. I've been able to do therapy with Michelle actually in the room together, and it has been one of the most rewarding experiences I've had as a therapist. I've learned so much from her, and I'm excited for you to learn from her as well today. Michelle is not only an incredible therapist, but she's also the host of the Right Fit podcast. So feel free to check that out. I'm going to link that in the show notes below so you can find that. And you can also find her on Instagram at the Right Fit Therapy. If you'd like to hear more from me, you can find me on TikTok and on Instagram at The Art of Healing by Trevor. You can also reach out to me on my website, trevorthetherapist.com. Michelle, I'm incredibly excited to have you on the podcast. This is something we've been trying to do for a little while, and it's exciting to have you here.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, we met up a few months back, right? And we were like, yeah, Hey, we both do podcasts, so that's exciting.
Yeah, we should do this. So if you guys haven't heard, Michelle has a podcast called The Right Fit, and it's all about how to find the right fit for you as far as the right therapist. And she interviews all sorts of therapists in Utah, pretty much only, right?
Right. Yeah. Just locally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talking about their specialties, and it kind of gives people an inside peek into getting to know a therapist maybe before they actually go to therapy. Cause that's a big thing. I always hear people saying like, oh, it's really hard to find the right therapist. I've been searching around and I see these funny like little reels and TikToks about trying to find the right therapist being like this big traumatic, difficult event. and so I think people would appreciate your podcast.
Yeah, for sure. It is. It can be overwhelming to find somebody. And we know that when it comes to therapy, finding a therapist that you jive with is like in research, it's one of the most important factors of effective therapy. Yeah. So it's not just like because you want somebody that feels good. It's really because that ends up being you find the most success when you fit well with the therapist.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's huge. I think about even as the therapist standpoint, I feel like my most valuable asset in therapy is there's a lot of words for it, alliance with the person on the other side, you know, with my client I guess the relationship is probably a better word. It's not as therapy laden word, but yeah, I think that's probably the most valuable resource that I have is like, hey, how is this relationship going? Because from there, that creates a foundation for everything we do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Even we do a lot of hard work in therapy, and if you feel like you can't trust or feel safe with your therapist, it really limits you in what you're able to do. So anyway, really passionate about it. And it's so fun to be able to chat with other colleagues and learn from them. And it's turned out like the kind of the point of the podcast is to introduce people to these therapists, but along the way you just hear really incredible stories, and they're able to kind of share their knowledge, both like their book smarts as well as their life experience. And so even if you're not looking for a therapist, I think it ends up being really valuable. So
absolutely. Yeah, no, it's true. I'm not looking for a therapist right now, and I listen to your podcast and I love it. I feel like I learn a lot from it every time.
Yeah, thank you.
I absolutely appreciate it. And I'm excited to learn some things today as we have a conversation together. Oftentimes when I'm reaching out to therapists and other people who want to be on this podcast, I don't want to like assign a topic or an idea, but it's important to have a little bit of structure. And so when I reached out to Michelle, she responded with the importance of emotion in our relationships. And if I'm not mistaken, are you feeling specifically the importance of emotion in like our love relationships?
Yeah, I would say emotion in general is fascinating. And then you layer on the complexity of the role of emotion in relationships, like specifically like romantic partners. That's kind of where I focus because I do a lot of work with couples.
Yeah.
So just kind of looking at emotion and how that plays out between people specifically in marriage or partnership. Yeah.
Yeah, it is really important, and it's something that you can't skip in a relationship. And I think if you try to, you A, cause some problems, and B, like you miss out on a lot. You know, you hear somebody say like, I hear a lot of people say things like, "Oh, don't get so emotional," or if you're like emotional, that's like a weakness. And I see that come up in therapy with some of my own clients that's how they were trained from birth, is like emotion is a weakness. But I think that even from sitting with you in therapy, I've done some therapy, like co-therapy with Michelle, where we're both in the room, and I see how emotion can be utilized to create deep connections, to create understanding. And it plays a phenomenal role in our relationships when we take time to slow down and actually look at what it means.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
So tell me what you were thinking give me some of your ideas when we say the importance of emotion in our relationships, or the relationship that emotion has to our love relationships.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing that kind of comes to mind is just a moment in my own therapy a handful of years ago, when my therapist was working with me and asked me the question, "Where do you feel that in your body?" And that is just a moment, honestly, that I will never forget, because I had no idea what she was talking about. It felt like she was speaking a foreign language. I could not even get there with her. And so that was just kind of sparked this interest, like, what is emotion?
Yeah.
And then just kind of understanding that part of it is in the body and part of it is in the mind. And then the other kind of part that comes up for me is, I think I'm actually a really emotional person. And as a kid, I don't think that was like, I don't know, somehow I got the message that it wasn't okay to be sensitive or emotional. And so I think really early on, I moved into my head and kind of away from that emotion center, and just kind of survived in that way. And I think it worked well for me. And so I'm now in this place where I'm realizing that's not where I want to be. I don't want to just be in my head. I think I'm missing out on a lot, or have missed out on a lot, and don't want to kind of continue doing that. And now as a mom, having kids, watching them deal with their own emotions, it's caused me in those relationships, caused me to take another look at myself and how I feel about myself having emotions. So that's kind of a lot, isn't it?
No, I mean, it makes sense. All of our, I think that's a pretty common theme, is that therapists, a lot of what we draw on is, it's schooling and it's models and it's all this stuff, but it's also our personal experience that makes us realize like, wow, there's something here that I maybe was missing out on, is being in touch with that emotional self. So what did that look like? She says, "Hey, how does that feel in your body?" And I could see I've seen a few different responses to that question, but it sparked something in you. And I'm curious what happened next.
Yeah. So I was, at the time, I was in graduate school to become a therapist. Mm-hmm. So it kind of aligned with this ability, like, okay, so this is just another thing that I need to look at, because in graduate school, and that's where you are right now, mm-hmm. So you can tell me if this has been your experience, but it just requires you to kind of flip everything on its head and take a look at things from all sides. So it was just like another element of myself that I felt like needed navigating or needed exploration. Mm. So what ended up happening was, I think because that emotion, that kind of the idea that emotion is so important was right at the forefront. When I went into my internship, I had the opportunity, I was asked by Christine Holding to intern at her new clinic that's the emotionally focused therapy clinic. And so, meaning that the work that is done with that theory is all rooted in the importance of emotion and attachment. And so it just, you know, when she made that offer, I just felt like, oh, that's the right fit. That is where I need to be. And so that really just kind of led my training in that direction of relationships, attachment, and emotion, and why all of those are so important in kind of creating a life of the quality that I wanted, as well as helping, you know, clients do the same.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you were saying that, I'm imagining somebody listening to this and saying, huh, I'm hearing, you know, attachment, I'm hearing emotions, I'm hearing relationships, and like, how do all of these blend together? And I'd love to just explore this a little bit. I also am at the Emotionally Focused Therapy Clinic, and yeah, we do a lot of this work, and it's opened my eyes to the way I even interact with people, you know, outside of my therapy room, and it's had a big impact in my life in understanding, you know, my own attachment, how my attachment has to do with my emotions, and how those then play into my relationships. But let's, if you don't mind, I'd love to look at and kind of do some teaching and some explaining together about what is the relationship. When we say attachment, what do we mean? Because that's a word that is thrown out there a lot. But what do we mean by attachment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, the easiest way to understand attachment is to actually kind of go back to the early experiments that were on attachment by Mary Ainsworth and John Bowlby. And this was more kind of around the World War II times. So a while back, but not too far back. So this is kind of relatively new information in kind of the world of psychology. But in those experiments, they had a mom and an infant go into a room together with a researcher or an observer, and they would ask the mom to leave. And then they just simply observed those infants. And I think they were, you know, 2 years old and younger, so pretty young. And what they noticed was there were kind of two general categories that these infants fell into. And they called them those with secure attachment and those with insecure attachment. They noticed that the infants with secure attachment were, what would happen is mom would leave and they'd become upset because, you know, that happens for babies, of course. Yep. And then what was different between these two groups was when mom would return, the babies with the secure attachment, they would go to mom for comfort. Mom would scoop them up, comfort them. And then at some point, the baby would kind of wiggle off mom's lap to get down and go play again. Mm-hmm. Now, the other group, the insecure attachment, they were kind of divided into two different categories. And they noticed two basic kind of strategies or behaviors that these babies used. And the kind of the first one was what they referred to as anxious attachment. So what that looked like was mom came back into the room, and those babies would just hold on to mom and never let go. Hold on with a really tight grip, with this like, if I let go, she'll leave me, she'll never come back. This fear of maybe abandonment that comes up for those. And then the other group in that insecure umbrella were more avoidant. And so mom would come back into the room and they would do things like kind of ignore mom. So they would just keep playing with the toys on the floor, maybe look over their shoulder like, oh, I see you there, but you know, I don't really need you, and kind of avoided mom. Mm. So kind of that is so helpful for me because I talk about babies, but what we actually know now about attachment is that we have the need to attach from cradle to the grave. So whatever we experience early in life gets carried with us into our romantic relationships. So if we have kind of that anxious style, that tends to look like pursuing our partners when there's distance, texting over and over again, trying to get their attention, kind of protesting the disconnection, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of that behavior. And then often those that are avoidant kind of shut down, leave the room, go internal. And so even though the behaviors look different as adults, the attachment need is still the same, meaning we need to feel safe and connected. And if we don't, we kind of do things that try to get it back or try to protect ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's how do you kind of understand it? That's where I go. That's how I think of it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that sums it up super well. I think in addition to that, I love the idea of your attachment basically, your attachment winds up influencing the way that, like you said, you handle your relationships in the future, and you especially handle, you know, the circumstances that life throws at you, including, you know, distance from your partner. You think about the baby who is secure knows that, hey, it's okay to go out, explore the world, do something, mom's going to come back, finds comfort there, and then is able to again go out and explore the world and be okay. And I also think that when it comes to like these love relationships, I was talking to somebody yesterday who classic display of an anxious attachment style is just putting all of their happiness into their partner. Just like if you're not okay, I'm not okay. And if I can't get you, this was a dating situation, so they weren't married, but it's like, if I can't have you, then like, I'm going to be right back to ground zero. I'm going to be depressed. I don't have any of like my own level happiness that exists outside of this person. And that's pretty classic. And then you also see kind of on the flip side, when a person has, you know, maybe there's conflict in the relationship or there's distance in the relationship, that's when it's uncomfortable. And you see that withdrawal and the stonewalling, and you start to see it show up in the behaviors. But yeah, it's interesting how much of a pattern it is, like you said, from the cradle to the grave. And if we're unconscious of that pattern, we'll just continue to live it forever, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, how do these, speaking of behavioral and how we see these attachments, we call them attachment styles, how they display in our behavior, What are some of the secure attachment type of behaviors? Because I think we really like to highlight, hey, this is avoidant, this is, you know, anxious. But what does secure attachment look like? And maybe some contrast examples.
Yeah, I think secure attachment looks like safety in being yourself and safety being in relationships.
Yeah.
So you feel safe being your authentic self in relationship. I think that's what it looks like. Because I think sometimes when we do not believe that we are safe in a relationship, our identity gets swallowed up and we like lose ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so that's like, so when I see secure attachment, those needs are balanced because we come into this world needing identity and slash autonomy, and we need connection with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have both of those, that is secure attachment. That's how I see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the kind of the buzzword that goes around when we talk about attachment, that's related is the codependency word.
Right.
And I have kind of mixed feelings about that, 'cause I think it gets used in a way that diminishes the importance of attachment. How do you feel about that?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I think in our culture, we really emphasize the importance of independence, and which is important. It's important to be able to feel confident and have self-worth and all of those things. And we need to be able to depend on other people, because the quality of our relationships truly does determine the quality of our lives. And so if we are simply kind of going to the extreme of, I don't need other people, I just need to be independent, you're going to lose a lot of value, or lose out on that experience, that fulfilling those human needs of being in connection with other people. And so I think at times we can look at them, it's kind of a paradox is kind of what comes up here, right?
Yeah.
We can look at them maybe at odds, like independence and dependence are at odds with each other. But actually what we find is the more securely dependent people are on other people, then the more secure they are in themselves, and vice versa. The more secure you are in yourself, the more secure your relationships are.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess how is a person able to kind of judge where they are on this spectrum?
Yeah, it's a good question. There are so many quizzes out there online, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say probably the quizzes. Yeah. Well, and speaking of that, I'm curious, kind of leading into the, we've touched on emotion as we've gone along, but help me understand the relationship between our attachment, how it's displayed, because we've talked about some of the behavioral things, but the importance of emotion in attachment and how that affects our relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. So going about it through kind of the science lens, in the kind of the evolution of the brain, we have kind of that primitive brain, that reptilian brain that's responsible for all of the things that we're really kind of unaware of, right? Our heartbeat and the breathing and our body temperature. It's all the things that we have in common with reptiles. The second layer that developed is the mammalian brain. And the difference between the mammalian brain and the reptilian brain is emotion. So you look at your dog or your cat, whatever kind of pet mammals, and you can tell the difference between the lizard and the dog.
Yeah.
And the dog has the ability to sense emotion and to has emotional needs, right? That's kind of where, I mean, that's humans as well. So it is a basic, like, embedded need that we, I'm sorry, I kind of skipped a step here. Emotion is necessary for connection. Emotion is what, like dogs, why they're in packs. They're pack animals. They need emotion because they need to be able to understand how to belong in that pack. And so emotion tells us how to belong and helps us communicate needs and allows us to be together. So it's that social part of us. Emotion is social.
Yeah.
So when we're trying to connect with people in our lives, we need that emotional connection. That's what really bonds us. And when you think of a love relationship, what is love? Is love a thought? I don't think people would categorize love as a thought. I think most people would categorize love as a feeling or as an emotion. And so we can't miss it, right? We can't simply skip over the emotions because they're uncomfortable or that we feel like they're just unnecessary or get in the way.
Yeah.
That's where love is rooted, is in the emotion.
Yeah. I love that. And it makes me think about something that we had talked about earlier this week, actually, is the idea that there's a lot of different emotions, and all these different emotions are opportunities for connection. And as you're speaking about this, You know, we think about love itself and how that feels is its own emotion, probably woven with all sorts of different emotions within it. Mm-hmm. And when we think about connecting emotions, the ones that make us feel love, we probably first go to like excitement or fun or just like mushy-gushy romantic love, happiness.
Joy.
Yeah. All of that. We immediately go there, but we don't necessarily think about the, you know, negative emotions umbrella, like feeling alone, like feeling sad, or, you know, maybe even feeling frustrated or anxious. How is it, I mean, can we connect on all of the emotions, or is it just some of them?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this because this actually came up in one of the sessions we were working on this week. Mm-hmm. And in that session, we asked the couple to share the feelings of fear that they were having with each other. And fear is something that we don't want to feel. We do a lot of things so that we don't have to feel afraid.
Right.
I would not necessarily classify that as a positive emotion. I don't think most people would, but it can be a connecting emotion. These are connecting emotions are typically the ones that are a little bit softer, that are a little bit more, they draw. When you see somebody in that emotion, they kind of draw on your kind of natural instinct to nurture and to care for the other person. Mm-hmm. So when we asked this couple to share their fear, they reported feeling more connected to each other, which I think was kind of a little light bulb going off, like, oh, okay. So, because there was a lot of fear of, if I tell my partner that I'm afraid, then they're going to go further away from me, or they're going to start to get ideas themselves that are, you know, scary things. But what ended up happening was they both shared their fear. And then what they realized was, I'm not lonely in my fear. Mm-hmm. So being able to share those deeper connecting emotions, even if they feel negative, can have a connecting experience.
Yeah. And I think something you just touched on is, it stands out to me, and it stood out to me in that moment when we were talking with this couple, is that, you know, what's the opposite of being alone, and it's being connected. Mm-hmm. And I think that oftentimes the negative emotion umbrella can actually be some of the most connecting emotions that are out there, because you're usually quiet about them, or, you know, you don't let everybody know that you're feeling sad or hurt or whatever it is. And it becomes a lonely experience. And to either A, find out that your partner's feeling that same way, and you go, wow, the fact that we're both sitting in the same boat, that kind of makes me feel like, I don't know, we're a team, we're close, like, you understand me, I'm here to rely on you. Or maybe they don't feel that feeling, but they're able to be there with you in that hurt. Man, that's really connecting. And that's why it's funny how you can transform opportunities for total disconnection into connection. And usually disconnection stems from some of these underlying softer, more vulnerable feelings that we're talking about right now.
Right. So I think instead of classifying emotions as like positive or negative, good or bad, I think we can actually look at them in this, in the way of, there's disconnecting emotions and then there are connecting emotions. Mm-hmm. Disconnecting emotions are typically things like frustration, irritability, anger. And because what we do with those emotions are, the behaviors that come with those typically are ones that repel or push people away. Mm-hmm. So when we're angry or frustrated, we often blame and criticize, right? And so you can kind of put it under this umbrella of, if I share that I'm frustrated with my partner, their response is pretty likely to get defensive because they feel like they have to protect themselves.
Yeah.
But if you're able to share sadness with your partner, which often accompanies things like frustration, if you share the sadness, then that actually allows them to tap into something different other than defensiveness.
Yeah.
They're able to tap into this, oh, I can see you and I know how it feels to be sad, and they can tap into empathy.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. When you were saying that, I was thinking about the disconnecting emotions, you know, we'll say kind of as a blanket umbrella, like anger or frustration, some sort of fighting feeling type of an emotion.
Yeah.
And it's funny, we all protect ourselves or protect our relationships in different ways based on kind of rewinding our attachment styles. Mm-hmm. If I'm anxious, you're going to see that criticizing and the blaming and so forth. If you're a little more avoidant, maybe it's like, I go to the garage, I shut the door, I don't talk to you. But again, it's that protection, and it still could be rooted in the exact same emotion, but you just express it differently depending on how you formulated your style of attachment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then things get a little bit interesting when you look at those attachment styles and say you have someone that's more anxious and someone that's more avoidant. We end up getting some really common patterns that we see with couples in therapy, where we have the anxious partner typically does go into that fighting energy where they're frustrated and irritable. And it's because their attachment is threatened. So they're actually scared and lonely. But it comes out as blame and criticism and frustration and trying to fix the relationship and trying to get their partner to see. And so they get louder if they're not being heard. That's kind of the energy of somebody with an anxious attachment style. So you have, you know, partner A is anxious, and then maybe partner B is avoidant. And their kind of MO is more of that energy that goes with, instead of fight, maybe that's more flight. So they tend to escape or leave. But what happens when you have these two people, the more one person does one, then the more the other person does the other.
Yeah.
So the more that partner A criticizes and blames, the more the other person goes away to self-protect. And when the other person is going away, that heightens the first partner's anxiety, and they feel like they're not being heard or seen. So they just get louder and bigger and protest more, which, you know, then the other person goes away. And that's how we end up falling into what we refer to as negative cycles.
Yeah. Yeah. And that negative cycle usually exists on that disconnecting emotion level. It's seen in our behaviors as we either criticize and blame, or we stonewall and pull away, or withdraw. We kind of classify it in the world of therapy, like oftentimes, at least in my sessions, it's like pursue or withdraw as a blanket umbrella. And we stay, what perpetuates that negative cycle, I think, is also that we stay in those disconnecting emotions. We have those other ones. We have the hurt. We have the loneliness. We have the fear. But it seems like it just doesn't get talked about, or it doesn't come to the surface. And we may not even recognize it in ourselves because we're just feeling so much of the anger, and we're focused so much on the behavior of our partner that we never get to slow down and access the connecting emotions.
Yeah.
I guess what to a person who is in that position, what are some of the things that they can do to start accessing those more connecting emotions and take a step back from the disconnecting emotions?
Yeah. You know, I actually had somebody reach out to me on Instagram this week, kind of asking the question in this way. My husband is irritating me like crazy. He's on his phone all the time, and for some reason it drives me nuts that he's growing out his mustache again. Right? So this is the level of the irritability, is where we are on that level with her, that emotional level. She is noticing that she is irritable. So if you are in that place, my first question would be, what else are you feeling? In addition to that irritability, what else are you feeling? And I imagine that when her husband pulls out his phone, it holds some sort of meaning to her about her.
Yeah.
Like, what does it mean about her that he's always on his phone? And it could be something like, well, maybe I don't matter. And if that's what she's believing, there's an emotion that's tied to that. Yeah. Maybe it's, and now we're coming down into that connecting emotion umbrella. It's yeah. a different level. We have irritability kind of at the surface. And when we dive deeper, there's these, maybe this feeling for her of, I'm lonely. I'm sad. I'm hurt. And if you can just imagine her sharing from that place of, I'm sad. And when you do that, I feel sad. When you do that, I feel really alone. Versus, hey, you're on your phone again. It really bugs me that you get on your phone every single night. Can you imagine in that scenario what his reaction is going to be? Mm-hmm. And is he more likely to hear what she actually needs when she shares out of that place of the connecting emotions instead of the disconnecting ones?
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine that she becomes, well, they both become a lot more accessible in that moment.
Yeah.
Cause he's able to put down his protector and go to a place of like, oh wow, I didn't know that that's what that meant for you or what that felt like for you. I think there's some of these aha moments, and we see this in session when somebody shares that underlying hurt, like, hey, in that moment when you're on your phone, like, I kind of feel like I'm not important and I get a little bit lonely sometimes. And there's this light bulb moment that goes off for the other one that says, oh shoot, I didn't know that that's what happened to you.
Yeah.
That's hard for me to hear. Mm-hmm. And it might be hard to hear. But I think it's better to hear something that's hard and be able to connect over it than skip over that feeling and continue to disconnect.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I would say something else that happens that kind of can be a block is right there, as you shared, I didn't know that. A lot of times what happens for the other person is they feel shame because mm-hmm. they feel like they've done something bad. So, but that partner then has the ability or has the choice of what to do with that shame. Do they hide because they're feeling shameful? Or do they turn around and say to their partner, I didn't know that. I didn't know that about you. When you say that, I noticed that I kind of go into this place of shame because I don't want to hurt you and I don't want to displease you. So there are so many opportunities for both partners to connect. Mm-hmm. And it's always through that vulnerable, softer connecting emotion.
Yeah. And I think the tendency built in all of us is to avoid those emotions, and that's kind of probably why we stay in that high level of disconnecting emotions. And I was recently chatting with Christine Holding, our mm-hmm. clinical director, and I was even noticing one of the emotions that maybe I was avoiding as a therapist even in session. And she was like, this is the opposite of what we're looking to do. You know, this is probably my words, not hers. She'll listen to this. I'm like, I didn't say that, but pretty close. Basically, the idea was, no, like, turn to it and heighten that emotion. Like, bring it up and look at it. If it's shame, yeah, let's look at it and see what that's like for you and explore it. And it seems like when these emotions, they're all down there, like, screaming for our attention. And the more we don't give them attention, the more they're going to get louder and show up in our lives and in our relationships and our behaviors and in problematic ways.
Right. Absolutely. Yep. That's what happens. They find their way up somehow.
They do. They yeah. do. And I think there's a lot of misinterpretation when they come up, because mm-hmm. one partner might be withdrawing because he wants to protect the relationship and he doesn't want to cause any more waves. He doesn't want to say anything else to hurt his partner. But his partner's on the other side thinking, oh, you're leaving me. You're distancing from me. You don't like me. I'm not enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And on the flip side, that turns into the pursuing and the maybe the criticizing. And he goes, oh, shoot, like, I'm not enough. I never get this right. And so if I'm not getting it right, I might as well just sit on the bench instead of playing the game. I'm going to continue to withdraw and stonewall. And it's like, there's a lot more underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm. It's like the iceberg metaphor.
Yeah.
You know, with couples, kind of above the surface are those disconnecting emotions and those disconnecting behaviors. That's what's above the surface. And that's where the rough water is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so if you're staying in those disconnecting motions, you are going to be tossed to and fro on those waves. It's going to be kind of intense and fast and kind of, you know, anxious. That is the energy that's above the water.
Mm-hmm.
When you dive below the surface and you go into those deeper, more connecting emotions, everything slows down.
Mm-hmm.
It quiets the conflict. It allows you to actually pay attention to what's going on rather than getting caught up in the waves.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I guess, is this same thing applicable in other relationships, or do we just see it in love relationships?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's in all relationships. These dynamics happen.
Mm-hmm.
At work, family of origin, in-laws, you name it. These things come up. Yeah. I think for most people, they value their love relationships the most. And so they're most willing to actually work on these things.
Yeah.
Because they care so much for these other people.
Yeah.
Because this is not easy work. This is challenging, and it requires, some significant motivation to take a look at these things. And I think love is the biggest motivator. Love is what gets people, you know, they're willing to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I love how you said that. Well, we're coming pretty close on our time, but I would love to know, for those who are interested in exploring this more, and they're like, man, this sounds really good. This is a good taste. Where would you point a listener who feels like this is right, but is grasping for some more and hoping to access those connecting emotions and build their relationship in a healthy way?
Mm-hmm. If they are readers, I would recommend reading the book Hold Me Tight by Sue Johnson. That is a really good book to kind of expand what we've talked about today.
Mm-hmm.
I would also suggest working on mindfulness. And that is because we need to understand what we're feeling before we can share how we're feeling.
Mm, that's huge.
Yeah. So, and mindfulness allows you to do that. It allows you to start witnessing yourself in a way that allows you to start putting some things together and understanding it. So, we're, you know, implementing a daily meditation practice. There are apps out there that I recommend to my clients often. So I think meditation is a good place to go. And of course, if you and your partner are in a place of just feeling really stuck, I would just recommend couples therapy, working with somebody that specializes in helping couples connect, kind of connect the dots, meaning understanding these kind of negative cycles that they're falling into, helping them. You know, a therapist can facilitate interactions that are below the surface so that they can understand what that feels like. So I, of course, recommend couples therapy as well. So,
yeah. And I think it's so helpful to have a therapist, because this is where I feel like compassion towards myself and just humans in trying to, you know, break these patterns, because they really are patterns. They stem from deep-seated like neurological patterns of how we attach to others, how we express that, and it's like learning a new language sometimes. And you might feel like you struggle as you look to understand your own emotions and then explain them and portray them in a way that is connecting. it's a challenging process. And I think that's where practicing, you know, even just with some friends is okay, who maybe the relationship isn't as impactful. And also working with a therapist, like you mentioned, we're both in Utah, obviously we would recommend the EFT clinic. All of the clinicians here are trained in specifically emotionally focused therapy, which is really what we've been describing this entire podcast. Mm-hmm. If you're outside of Utah, looking for a therapist who specifically focuses on emotionally focused therapy will put you in line with the principles that we're talking about today as well.
Yes, and if they're interested in working with an EFT therapist, they can actually go to ICEFT online, which is ICEFT, and there's a directory. And so if they're, you know, all over the world, there are EFT therapists.
Yeah, everywhere. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for your time. It was phenomenal. If someone would like to learn more about you, I know you have a phenomenal Instagram that you put a lot of great content out there. Where can they find out about you?
Yeah, so I am on Instagram. I'm at The Right Fit Therapy. And then, like I mentioned at the beginning, I do have a podcast where I interview other therapists. And that's called The Right Fit Podcast. And you can find me at the EFT clinic, just on our website there. And I'm on Psychology Today.
Perfect.
You can Google my name. So
perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time. It was phenomenal. And for those of you who would like to learn more about my content and hear more of this, you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at The Art of Healing by Trevor. And you can also reach out directly to me through DMs there or on trevorthetherapist.com, as well as the EFT clinic. I'm there. So thanks again, Michelle. I've been looking forward to this, and I'm glad that we did it.
Me too. It was great. Thank you so much.
Again, if you'd like to reach out to me, you can find me on Instagram at The Art of Healing by Trevor. You can also find me on TikTok under the same handle or reach out on trevorthetherapist.com. At the time of this recording, I, Trevor Hansen, am a master's level student therapist and am not a licensed therapist. I practice therapy under the supervision of fully licensed therapists. This show is not a substitute for therapy and is not therapy.